Good morning and welcome to the roundtable panel for this Thursday morning. It is the 12th of March. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome you, and let me introduce our panel, and then we'll get to how you can be a part of our conversation, and then we'll actually talk about the topics of the day. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir. I am fine.
Excellent. Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick joins us as well. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
It is very nice to have you with us, as always. And WAMC newsman Ray Graff.
Good morning.
With us as well. Good morning, sir. Let's talk about last night when I was putting the stories together, I was one of the stories included was, of course, the story about the police chief in Ferguson resigning shortly after the city manager of Ferguson resigning, and then when I went to bed, that was the that I thought was going to be the extent of it. And then last night at about 2 a.m, a tragedy occurred where two officers shot outside of the police station in Ferguson. The shootings occurred after a crowd gathered outside police headquarters. As news spread that the city's police chief had agreed to resign, a spokesman said that the officer's injuries were serious but not life-threatening. From what I heard, one shoulder injury and one facial injury from what the early reports are not confirmed. And so, and then, of course, there is so more unrest, even though there has been the Justice Department report, the resignation of the city manager, the resignation of the police chief, and now this very unfortunate incident.
You know, watching this from afar, you can't, you don't know everything, but you can't help but think if they had acted sooner or more decisively, because we've been waiting and waiting for this police chief to resign, but there's a mayor there, and why didn't the mayor take stronger action sooner? And I think that may have increase the problem there. The people are just displeased with the whole system. It seems to be not responding to them.
You never know, right, what the motives of the people who did the shooting were. This could well be people. This could well mean people who want to make it worse are out there, and they're saying, okay, there seems to be some progress here. Eric Holder comes out, everybody's resigning, people are we're having basically trustees come in to oversee what we're doing, and then somebody gets up there and shoots two cops. So then you say to yourself, well, why'd they do that for? Well, you see it around the world. You see that there are people who don't want to see things resolved. They want to see things get worse because that's what they do, you know, for a living. So, or it could just be some guy who grabs a rifle and says, I'm going to do this. But the question of motive in this fits so interestingly into the rest of the political spectrum. In other words, what's really going on? We now have this whole discussion of racism that we never had, and there are politicians on both sides of this thing who are going to make hay out of this. And that's what the newspapers have to cover and decide what they want to do with
it. City officials had hoped that the changes would help residents see that they were prepared to start anew. Mm-hmm. Instead, Chief John Belmar of the St. Louis County Police Department said the Thursday shooting only realized the worst fears he has had since the unrest over Mr. Brown's killing, that it would lead to serious violence. Chief Belmar said, quote, that he believed the gunman targeted the officers who were lined up shoulder to shoulder in front of the Ferguson police station to keep protesters back.
The gunman did what?
That it was targeted to the officers.
Well, of course, yeah, but why?
Yes, but I think what they're saying, I guess, the chief is that against those specific officers who were hit.
Oh, specific officers.
Well, I think that is the implication.
Because there's been a lot of shots into the air, or, you know, just a lot of gunfire that's gone up into the sky that hasn't been aimed at people.
Well, this kind of sort of guessing. That's all it is. It's just guessing. It's just speculation. It's just why. Look, there'll be somebody who comes out and says, the shootings were done by right-wingers who wanted to make, you know, in other words, people will use the facts in this thing to sort of create whatever scenario is of political use to themselves.
7+ hours later, Have they ascertained whether or not there is any surveillance video that may have shown? From what I understand, the gunmen, or more than one, were at a distance away.
A distance on a hill. A hill sort of looking down at the hall where the police were again lined up. And I think the answer to your question is no. The Chief Belmer did say at a news conference about an hour and a half ago that said, quote, "I've said all along that we cannot sustain this forever without problems." And I guess there is obviously truth to that. I think that it is very hard as this drags on and not drags on, but goes through its many stages that, yeah, there's it is. We've all been kind of gearing and waiting for that, not obviously hoping that it wouldn't happen, but thinking that there could be another violent act.
There's always concern that they're going to shut down protests or that it's open season on cops in that town. Both bad, very, very bad outcomes. I mean, the motivations of people, I mean, the quicker they find out who did this and find out why this is happening, the better, of course.
Both the police, and again, to Alan's point that, you know, that we don't know and there's a lot of speculation, but in the press reports this morning, including in the New York Times and the Washington Post, as well as in the St. Louis papers, they're saying that the protesters, the regular protesters, and the police officers had somewhat of a bond over the last year because they'd been in this and the protesters were very quick to say on the scene that said that the gunfire did not come from among them, rather from a distance behind them. And the police had said that they had felt that, you know, that it was not within this group of regular protesters who had been on the scene, but it's obviously hard to know.
220 yards is a pretty good shot. I mean, that's 600 plus feet. So, obviously not among the regular protesters there.
Right.
That's a long way.
It is a long way. It is a long way. Are there letters on this, or do you?
I can read a few. Tom says, "What happens when the people of Ferguson realize the Second Amendment might apply to them also?"
I don't know what that means.
What happens when the people of Ferguson realize the Second Amendment might apply to them also? In other words, I think it's a shot at guns, right? Is that,
I don't know.
Okay, well, all right. And then we have heard from Rich, who says, "Orange and Rockland County State Assemblyman James Skoufis has proposed the bill Integrity in Government Act, which is discussed on the WAMC website under News. Bravo, many cities and towns need this. Secrecy is rampant in New York State." And dear panel, I've heard Alan, pardon me if I'm wrong, but why aren't the newspapers screaming bloody treason? I'm sure this has to do with the letter.
Yeah, it's the subject heading. Republican letter, it says.
Republican letter. Thank you for that. Let's see here.
Go
to the top there, Alan. Okay, Joel says, "Just an observation. Why is it when a black teenager gets shot, it's a U.S. racism epidemic, and it's the officer's fault? And when a cop gets shot, it's again the officer's fault?"
I don't know. Who said that? Nobody's it was the officer's saying that. Fault?
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I think Joel is saying basically that this is what some people are likely to do with this phenomenon. I agree with you guys. I don't know what it means.
And in Ferguson, it's been pretty clear. The Justice Department has come in and found that there's been some real racial disparities in how they stop people on the street and how they find them in the court. This is something, a real issue that they have to deal with out there.
But they didn't indict the cop. And to some people, that's not enough, what you're saying. To Irene, "The mayor, the ex-police chief, and others need to be held accountable. Any government official who is in the wrong needs to be investigated and charged."
Let's pause there for a moment. We welcome your letters as well. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. And we will continue our conversation after this short break.
Support comes from Field Goods, providing year-round deliveries of produce from local farms for pickup at workplaces or community sites, and offering workplace wellness programs. Field-goods.com. Bally Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home. Valleyhomeimprovement.com. And Stony Point Center, an open space in the Hudson Valley, staffed by a community of Jews, Muslims, and Christians, committed to peace and social justice, accepting bookings for conferences and retreats. StonyPointCenter.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We welcome your letters and your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have letters.
Yeah. Here's one from Steve. Alan just said, quote, people will use the facts of the situation to advance whatever political narratives suits them. So far, so good. That's true. That is exactly what you are doing, Alan, suggesting that this shooting of the two cops might be a right-winger looking to stir further unrest because, in parenthesis, supposedly people of a conservative political mindset don't want progress in racial injustice fits your view that everyone on the right is a scoundrel. How unlikely this is, and how transparent of you to suggest it. There's nothing there to back up such an accusation. Well, Steve, in all honesty, because I'm always trying to control my temper, I never said anything like it. I just simply said, and you were right in the beginning, people will take whatever they want and fit it into their own political perspective. And I said, here is an example of what someone might say. So, you know, that ain't right. What you did just now ain't right. Anyway, just not right. What can I say?
Yeah, a lot of people will be taking this incident and molding it into their, or putting it into their own political narrative. I'm anxious to see how this will happen, how this will play out.
And it will happen. I don't think there's any question. So anyway, Ernst says, I think this is the underlying mentality here. It applies to the shooters just as it applies to what is going on in our Congress. See the Argentine foreign film entry for a relatively thorough study of the human love of revenge.
Yes, and she was, I think when she says this, she's referring to revenge, yes.
Okay, and Liam says, doesn't this police shooting ultimately serve to justify the need for either further forms of repression? And William says, the Ferguson prosecutor bears responsibility. He deliberately created a bad case. We know this how? And then Julia says, this is not an excuse, but we need to recognize that, unfortunately, human nature is such that no matter whether black, brown, red, yellow, or white, in any group of people subject to years of institutional discrimination, a certain number will become bad actors. Ultimately, the survival of civil society depends upon individual responsibility. And Michael says, is your guest implying that if the mayor or other city official had acted more forcibly in resolving the race issue, those cops would not have been harmed? That's blaming the victim, kind of like blaming the rape victim for asking for it. I don't get it.
I don't know who our guest is.
I think that's me.
Could be Judy. Could be our wonderful regular Judy.
I don't know.
Hardly a guest.
I don't think.
And the point I'm trying to make is I think the institution there did not react forcefully and decisively early on. And I think the public, that fed into the public disenchantment with what was going on.
Yes.
I'm not blaming the police officers who were shot. Maybe their bosses.
And Vinny says, normally I agree with Dr. Shartok, or at least some member of the on the panel. Today you all sound like you're at a loss over last night's shootings. How can this panel, along with the mainstream media, all remain so aloof about the growing wave of dissatisfaction the American people have with the representation of their government, both on the left and the right, regardless of race? These shootings are merely protests, an attempt to acquire justice where none exists any longer in America. And that's from Vinny.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back and continue our program after a news break from the BBC. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org will continue after this short break. Well, as you know, panelists, that was an enlightening conversation, by the way.
I'm going to leave.
That everyone missed.
Yeah. I love you all, panelists, but I have to say I do wish, as we start our conversation here about the Secret Service, I am sorry that Rosemary's missing this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I love to see her get revved up in about 4 seconds.
Secret Service or TSA.
Stir, mix, and enjoy. Yeah. The Obama administration is investigating. I have to say, when I saw this story last night, I thought it was a report about an earlier incident. And then as I started to read, I was like, really? Seriously? Oh, my God. Okay, so the Obama administration is investigating allegations that two senior Secret Service agents, including a top member of the president's protective detail, drove a government car into White House security barricades after drinking at a late-night party last week, according to an agency official. Officers on duty who witnessed the March 4th incident wanted to arrest the agents and conduct sobriety tests, according to a current and a former government official familiar with the incident, but the officers were ordered by a supervisor on duty that night to let the agents go home, and they all spoke on the condition of anonymity.
Okay.
The episode presents an early test for the Secret Service's new director, Joseph Clancy, who was appointed by President Obama last month after a string of security lapses at the White House and other embarrassing missteps. And this appears to be both an embarrassing misstep as well as a security lapse.
We have to accept the idea that it is a misstep as a part of this whole narrative. In fact, when is the last time, last president, we just saw this spate one after another after another after another of these things happening? So to me, it raises a series of questions. It certainly doesn't give us the answers we want, but it raises a certain question. Why is this happening now with, frankly, the first black president of the United States? Why are these things going on and unresolved? So if I'm the president now, I don't think it's satisfactory anymore to just appoint one person and you say, okay, we have this cosmetic thing, one person at the head of it. There has to be a total investigation of what's going on over there and why and whether there are individual attitudes. One of these guys is on his – one of the two drunks was on, alleged drunks is on his – top security team, on the president's top security team.
And worked with very closely with Clancy. They would work together. So on international trips, it would be the two men that were the, what do they call them, the body men? The guys that are like really like right with him to his right and his left as he's working a crowd. Those were the two guys. So one of them is the head of the Secret Service now. The other one was a part of this incident.
You know, I too thought it was an old story when I first read it. But also very, very concerning to me is the fact that the supervisor in charge said, nope, we're not going to charge them. We're not going to do any.
Don't take sobriety tests. Let them go home.
Yeah, so this is a double layer problem. The fact that it happened in the first place and then the fact that the system is going to turn look the other way. And thankfully, the newspaper found out about it and reported because we never would have known.
I mean, maybe they were just looking for their drone.
Yeah.
But who knows?
And by the way, the late night party was a Wednesday night. So this is like Animal House. Maybe in the movie, they can resurrect John Belushi and have him be the head of the Secret Service.
It was a retirement party for somebody on their staff, too.
That was always a retirement party.
It's unbelievable.
But Judy, you make a great point. Why is this happening now? Why is there one after another of these? I just don't get that.
So the Secret Service hasn't always been this way. This is something
we haven't heard about it.
maybe it was always covered up, or maybe this is a new manifestation. But these guys have been in the force for a long time. Correct?
I think you're right. There's a microscope now. This may have been, to some extent, the way these guys operate when they're off duty.
I'm disappointed in them.
Can I ask a strange question? How do you go through a security or go crash into a security barrier at the White House and not have it reported from March 4th to March 12th? Isn't that area just regularly under some supervision that even reporters and other people would notice that a car would be smashing into a barricade at the White House?
But it's whitewashed, and that's what's so troubling about this, that the head guy in charge says, go home and sleep it off, basically. That's awful.
Hey, I'm looking forward to the video because there has to be video.
I would assume there's a ton of video.
And apparently it was an active incident. They thought that there was something that they were investigating, and it hadn't been resolved when these guys come crashing through.
Oh, look,
through.
It's Joe.
Oh, wait, there was an active incident prior to them crashing into the barricade?
As they were crashing into the barricade.
In other words, they thought that the crashing into the barricade was an incident, right?
No. The other folks on duty were investigating something. There was some sort of bag that was being suspect.
Oh, boy.
So maybe they thought they were,
helping?
Helping.
Yeah.
But apparently they didn't help because they crashed into the barricade and their lights were blazing when they shouldn't have been blazing. Many things that they were doing wrong, and they weren't helping this active incident, which turned out to be nothing.
By the way, just for you, just to keep in the back of your mind,
right.
Secret Service rules do prohibit turning on flashing lights without a security reason and driving a government vehicle after drinking alcohol. So just for your plans.
Can they set up their own email service?
Nice, right.
This is not good. And it also encourages others to do it. Every time you have an incident, there's always copycatting that's possible. And also, when somebody gets away with it, as we've been seeing, the spate of people who have sort of semi-gotten away with it at least, then there's somebody else who's sitting there, a troubled person, who is saying, I could do this too. Very, very troubling.
I guess they also, to Judy's point, the officers had their lights on, and because of this other incident, they were flashing their badges to get through other barriers, and then there's a series of the spikes that come up in the those go down and they can go through. So they got through a certain, and then they crash the car.
So their excuse, you're saying, may be that they knew there was an incident going on, and they rushed
to
drunk.
Help.
That sounds plausible.
Well, no, that's going to be there. That's why I say that's going to be the defense.
I mean, if there's an emergency and you are at a part, if you're off duty, I'm not saying this happened, but if I was a defense attorney, I would say if there was a perceived emergency, my client was having a few at a retirement party,
right.
But then duty called and he had to hustle.
Sure.
That's a plausible defense.
Sure. And that's what they're going to say. So anyway, we heard from Robert. Claims that the parading of embarrassing Secret Service incidents do not arise from a culture of tolerance are absurd. There needs to be a thorough house cleaning, and that wouldn't happen until outsiders are running the agency. Ex-Commissioner Kelly would be a great choice, and that's Bob from Albany. And then EJ says, good morning, all. I hope you are all well. Poo-poo to the people poo-pooing on you. I always find you guys to be very inclusive in your colloquy and very straightforward, never accusatory or mean, and I always like that. You tell it like it is. Keep it up. Love you guys. EJ, otherwise known as Little Fishy.
Are you listening to the station, EJ? Interesting.
That's what he says.
All right. Let's move on to another issue, and then we'll take a break. One of the other things we want to talk about is, speaking of Washington, John Kerry spoke yesterday. Secretary of State John Kerry sharply criticized a letter from Republican lawmakers to the leaders of Iran in testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, calling it misleading and irresponsible. Mr. Kerry said, my reaction to the letter was utter disbelief, warned that the letter signed by 47 Republicans this week could embolden Iranian hardliners.
You know, I know everything's really complicated and nuanced and political, but I remember back in the days when I was studying U.S. government, and it was true that the Senate had the right to approve treaties. And I know that everything is different nowadays, and those, you know, simple rules really don't take effect anymore. But as I was reading this story, I said, well, yeah, isn't that the way it's supposed to be? But apparently this isn't a treaty. This is something entirely different.
Mm-hmm. I have never experienced in my personal letters, people writing to me, people stopping me on the street, people at home saying to me, this is the most outrageous thing I have ever seen, that 47 senators would undermine a president's foreign policy. And it is outrageous. It's over the line. But what it tells you is the lengths that these guys will go to get this man. To me, it is one of the most outrageous things I have ever seen. And I wonder where everybody is on this one. There are some people, but it's really nuts.
Well, I agree that there's a lot of politics involved in this. But I was just trying to bring back the issue, the point they're trying to make is that Congress should have some role in approving major international agreements. I mean, we've so far gotten away from that.
Well, that's their privilege, all right. But you just don't do something that skates on the treasonous this. It's just not done. And the fact that they have decided to do it now, once again, makes you scratch your head and say, hey, what is it about, you know, Mitch McConnell those years ago? So we got to get him out of here. And this is just part of that thing. So, and now, of course, they're doing it with Hillary, too. They're going to glom on to anything that they find that she does.
You know, we disagree about this one because
I do.
About the emails, because I believe the emails are
That's
public
okay.
knowledge, and people may be beating up on Hillary Clinton, but in this case, there's a real issue at stake here.
If you take the whole thing and you see how far they're willing to go, these guys, if it's not this, it was Benghazi, and that petered out too. So what I'm saying to you is I have never seen this kind of spirited attack the way that this is happening. It never happened with the Democrats and the Republicans when they were in power, when the Bushes were in power. Not this kind of thing.
Well, to your point, though, it seems that, as you say, as Benghazi petering out, it seems that one of the reasons that they're doing this is to so that it doesn't peter out, to
they
keep it going
fan,
on.
They want to blow, like in the Boy Scouts, when you
right,
got down
fan
and,
the
you,
flames.
And you blew on the tinder.
And you get you get the eruption,
sure.
right? So, and because you don't want that fire to die out.
But, you know, our world is full of political rhetoric, but that doesn't mean we can't discuss the issues. And I think it's important to get to the heart of the issue, discuss it at length, get to what's really going on, and then pinpoint the rhetoric for what it is. Of course, Alan, you've been watching it for years and years, and when you say you haven't seen anything as bad, that means something.
Well, I have never seen anything like this, nor has anybody else. You know, there are people who are saying they should be arrested, they should be taken out in chains and handcuffed.
The 47 senators is on the
yeah,
letter.
That's right, for doing this. They went and got themselves, as you know, a guy who had been a veteran himself and in the Mideast Wars and to do it and clean. But, you know, I mean, I just think that the New York Times and everybody else, of course, agrees with me on this. But it's nuts, just crazy.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about other stuff. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from Utica College, offering a Master of Science degree in cybersecurity online with concentrations in cyber intelligence, computer forensics, and cyber operations. Utica.edu. And Berkshire Stringed Instrument School of Lutery, Windsor Mill, North Adams, Massachusetts. Working to guide students through hand-building guitars, mandolins, and ukuleles. BerkshireStringedInstruments.com for class registration. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our panel for the roundtable this morning. Alan Shartok, Ray Graff, and Judy Patrick on the program this morning. We'd love to hear from you as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll take a few letters, and then we'll get into a couple of other interesting subjects to bat about.
So Ryan says, I agree that it's dangerous to have unilateral foreign policy. However, what Congress did was horrifying. We may be on the verge of making an agreement with a country that could potentially make them less dangerous and more open to Western influence, which is exactly what we've been trying to do for so long. And thanks to the Republicans in Congress, we could have lost this chance. Let's see. And I don't know. People call in and they write in and say, Alan, why do you say? Because I'm reading them at the same real time with you. And so if I'm reading a letter, right?
Right, I'm with
and,
you.
And it doesn't, I don't fully get it, and it's maybe over the top, I'm not reading it. It's that simple.
Right.
But that's what
you're
I
trying
have to
filter
do.
As you go.
Yeah.
Which is tricky. Even for someone of your vast intellect.
You're a musician, right?
Yes.
I happen to play a B-flat instrument, the trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm reading out of a C fake book,
right,
I have to transpose one measure ahead in order to play with the other guys.
Absolutely. And so this is akin to playing an alto clef, for instance.
It might be.
Yeah. That's a good point.
You might well be right. You
All
might well
right,
be
sir.
Right.
Excellent.
Okay. And
nice use of the term alto clef,
yeah.
by the way.
Well, or tenor clef. Yeah. But tenor clef was always easier. Alto clef, very tough for trombone.
This is alto.
Right.
But he's a banjo player, so it's all over his head anyway. So.
Okay. So Walker says, to correct you all, read David Ignatius's column from this week. He points out that the Iranian deal involves several nations, which constitutes an international agreement. This is what makes the Republican action ridiculous and treasonous. And Jim says, the letter by 47 rogue senators to the nation of Iran was not only a major breach of diplomatic protocol, it was also disrespectful and unprofessional. It may also have been illegal. The Senate's right to approve a treaty does not encompass interfering with ongoing diplomatic negotiations. A special prosecutor should be appointed. Huh.
You up for the gig, Alan?
No.
No?
No. I'm trying to wind down here.
Okay.
We're good?
4 or 5 years. Well, that's all.
Okay. Let's talk about NPR host Diane Rehm. Mm. I find this story fascinating.
Boy, me too.
Man. So following criticism, NPR host Diane Rehm scales back efforts in Right to Die debate. Now, here is the story in a very quick nutshell. We should be noted, we do not air this program on WAMC.
On WAMC 2, right?
We do it on WAMC
2. HD 2.
If we did it here, we'd be out of a job.
Right.
I'd be out of a job.
Right.
Okay.
No, because that's during the same time.
The same time slot. It runs from 10 to noon.
And you are, frankly, and I will hear from some people, but you are, frankly, 1,000 times better
well,
than
thank
she ever
and
thought
cheaper.
About being.
I mean, really, bottom line.
Not cheaper.
No.
Because if you buy a syndicated program, it's not
oh, that's
as
a good
much
point.
as if you pay a wonderful man like Joe to be full-time here at the station.
So following criticism from NPR's ombudsman, and concern from top public radio officials, Diane Rehm has agreed to stop attending fundraising dinners for Compassion and Choices, a group advocating for the legalization of physician-assisted suicide. Diane Rehm, whose husband John died last year after he stopped eating and drinking when his doctor wouldn't help end his suffering from Parkinson's disease, spoke at length to the Washington Post last month about how her husband's experiences helped convince her to publicly support assisted suicide laws. She agreed to attend a series of fundraising dinners for the Right to Die group and appear on the cover of its magazine. The first dinner was held on February 23rd, but shortly after the Post article appeared, NPR's ombudsman raised questions about whether the longtime talk show host was violating NPR's ethical standards. Rehm works for WAMU, but her show is distributed and promoted by NPR. Elizabeth Jensen, who is the ombudsman, says, my own view is that Rehm's participation as a celebrity guest of sorts at fundraising dinners for an organization that does not extensive political lobbying, as compelling as her personal story is and as careful as she is being, is a step too far for someone associated with National Public Radio.
Well, look, I am a great believer, as I think everybody in this room is, of the First Amendment. And I don't think you take somebody's First Amendment rights away when they are this passionate about anything. Look, I say things, people, you say things. You know, this business is a slippery slope when you start saying, we're going to decide what you can do and not do. Now, have we ever had anybody who broke some rules around here that we have in our news division who may have gone to a protest and been out front with it? And have we spoken to them about it? Yeah, we have. Years ago, we had it. And it was sort of outrageous. So it's a case-by-case basis. But I think this is despicable that a bunch of this is terrible, and radio people do this.
I have just two thoughts on this, real quick, Ray, and then. But one of them is that first of all, she's a talk show host. She's not a reporter. She's a talk show host.
Exactly.
Also, none of these issues were ever discussed on the radio as much as they're upset about her outside activities, which, quite frankly, is her time. And her experience is that her husband died and was looking for a physician-assisted suicide. So she comes to this with a very, with the background to discuss.
But should she – of course she should be allowed to give money or whatever she wants. But should she be allowed to be a public figure at these events? Now, this organization, this Right to Die organization, throws money around. It lobbies.
Yeah.
So I think that's the crux of this. In other words, this organization lobbies government officials. So should she therefore be a public face of it?
I go back to Alan's point, though. If she has the right to say how she feels about a certain topic, and with the background that she has, why would those rights be given away for any group if it is not bleeding into what she is doing on the air?
Okay, so let's turn it around for a minute. Much as I hate to do this, what if it were that she was a right-to-lifer, and now she goes and she puts her picture on the front of the magazine as a right-for-lifer? Would we be sitting here, you and I, Joe, saying the same thing that we're saying now? I like to think I would.
Yes, I would like to think.
You mean defending her right to do this?
Yes. Well, I would, and I think it is the same arguments that we're using, I think, would hold up in that particular case. I will say that in some emails that Alan has distributed to us and that have gone around within these higher ups of public radio, I think because they saw and they saw the right to life and the right to die debate, that a lot of people, that's what they thought, that it was, that we were getting into the abortion issue and not about a right to die. And I think some of the people who were complaining about it weren't even aware fully of what the issue was.
You know, what is the ethical standard here? I mean, it's not clear from the story, well, what the rule is.
What would you do?
Well, I mean, we have the ethical standard that our reporters are not supposed to get involved in political.
What about your columnists?
Well, all our employees, especially those who work or cover specific political issues, even sports reporters, I really don't want them to get involved in political campaigns. In this case, it seemed like they were okay with her talking about it and being an advocate for this issue. What they described as a step too far was when she got involved in fundraising dinners. Is that what
the point? The way I understand it as well, and that makes sense.
Well, I don't know. Public radio is an interesting institution. It's still evolving. People love this program, and our numbers are huge as a result of having started this. But everybody, Rosemary, me, everybody's opinionated, and I think that's what public radio should be. It doesn't mean you should be muzzled. Now, there are heads of public radio stations, I'm telling you now, who are all over our listserv saying, no, never, under any circumstances. Basically, we should be boring, and we should never have an opinion. I'm against that. I think it's so important that it be vibrant.
But they're not saying she can't talk about it.
No, I know. I'm talking. I'm extending the conversation. Right?
But I also, to Alan's point, the listeners didn't have a problem with it. The station that she works for didn't have a problem with it. The only people who seemed to have a problem with it were the higher ups at NPR.
NPR has rules that if you are on the air, you can't do anything political. And I adhere to this, too. If a friend puts some stupid political thing on Facebook and I want to say, well, you nitwit. I will not. I can't. I don't comment on any political thing, even in my personal media. You know, social media.
Let's leave it there. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Judy Patrick, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Always great to be here.
And Raymond and Alan, thank you.
And thank you. And Ray, you're wrong.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Okay, you're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.